The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back to their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
Welcome to the GAR. It's on a Wednesday this week. Hello to all our YouTube viewers. There's loads of you out there. I know there is. Connor and Conan are here with me in studio. We're going on a Wednesday, lads, because I'm doing a GA Jackass tomorrow. So we say we get the podcast out of the way. I'm going doing wakeboarding. Have to do with and we're really running low on ideas. Yeah, it's at the bad time of the year. The one thing I think the actual GA Jackass stunt, I have to do a jump, and I'm sure I'll wipe out and it'll be hilarious and a whole lot. But hopefully, actually jumping into water, I think, should actually be the Jackass.
Where is that?
It's out in Grand Canal Dock. They do some sort of thing.
So you're on the back of a boat, are you?
On the back of a boat, on a snowboard type.
In November.
Jesus. I'm running out of ideas, lads. I really am. But anyways,
when you said we were going on Wednesday, I thought it was because you said you'd lost your memory before the podcast. It's like, oh, I'll not say it to him. I don't want to trigger him anymore.
Right, so Ballyboden played Clonkill last night, lads, and it was a very emotional occasion. Ballyboden were very hot favourites. Clonkill absolutely, you know, did themselves huge justice and, you know, showed an awful lot of character. They drew with Ballyboden after normal time, 1:17 apiece, and that's obviously after that awful tragedy of Annabelle Loughlin, who's Enda Loughlin's daughter, and she passed away last weekend. So, like, I mean, there were a lot of people complaining that it was going to be on Tuesday night at all because the funeral was yesterday. And, like, I mean, Luke Loughlin, who is a relation, played and scored 1-2 after being at the funeral on the same day. And I was like, when I was reading the tweets about this, I was like, this is outrageous. Why are they fixing it on the same day as the funeral? And it was fixed last Friday, and apparently Clonkill agreed to it. But I would be of the opinion that they shouldn't have to agree to it, because you should ask them what are the arrangements and then you should work around that.
Yeah.
But as it turns out, they agreed to play it, which I think is saving a lot of face for Leinster Council, because I don't think it should have been fixed at all for that same night. But they did, and Ballyboden gave Clonkill a guard of honour after the game, you know, and there was a nice tribute to Annabelle on the scoreboard after the game, and Clonkill can hold their heads up high.
Yeah, like, it was very emotional night, and even just reading around some of the story of Annabelle and some of the quotes of Enda talking at the funeral, it's heartbreaking yeah. stuff. Mm. And like, it was one of those nights where hurling wasn't really important.
There's some lovely pictures as well of the Ballyboden lads sympathising with, is it Luke Loughlin?
Luke Loughlin, he's a Westmeath footballer as well. He's on the senior team.
And they said that he gave a speech beforehand, and he said that Enda, Annabelle's dad, said to tell the boys to do it for him and the family. So, and he said to tear into them on the night. So yeah, like, a massive character, because you don't imagine how difficult that was on the day of the funeral itself.
Yeah.
But it was good. Ballyboden actually contacted them, as far as I know, and asked them, did they want to change it? And Clonkill said they'll go ahead. So that was good at Ballyboden as well.
Yeah, it was very good at Ballyboden. Ballyboden, obviously, a brilliant club, and proved themselves to be that last night. The Clonkill manager, Kevin O'Brien, tweeted after the game, "I hope we did Enda and his family proud," and I think it's very obvious the answer to that. So congratulations to Clonkill, and commiserations, and all our thoughts are with the Loughlin family. To move on, lads, Rory Beggan is kind of been spoken about since. So we left Rory Beggan, the Cluxton debate, off this show last week. I purposely did not put it in because I had beef with all the other stuff. And you can't have beef. Last year, the podcast, we defended Cluxton against Clark. We thought it was unfair that it was such a close call, and he had lost it the year before to Clark, that it was very, very unfair on Cluxton not to win it last year. I didn't think it was close enough this year. Beggan had a bigger impact. He was braver. And there's stats out in the Irish News now, and Cathal O'Kane has crunched the numbers, and he deserves a lot of credit for wherever he got all his stats from. But they basically leave you in no doubt who deserved the All-Star this year. And like, you can talk about opinion is nothing when you have the actual stats down, right? So they both had 158, or Began had 158 kickouts, Cluxton 159. Incredibly close. Yeah, like, I mean, yeah, there's not even, you don't even have to do any sort of percentages here. So percentage of kickouts won, Began had 87%, Cluxton 85%. Not much between them there. Kickouts lost 12 and 14. Again, we're not reading into any of that. The big one for me is uncontested kickouts. Uncontested kickouts. So Rory Began had 76, so 48% of his kickouts were uncontested.
So it's just kicking it to a free man.
That's kicking it to a free man who's not being marked, right? And this is what I said a lot about Cluxton, that now he's taking the easy tap to the cornerback. He's no problem. He just wants to keep possession, and that's fine. There's no skill in that, right? So Cluxton's uncontested kickouts are at 71%. So immediately there, Began has a huge advantage. So he's only on 48% uncontested. Cluxton is tapping it to a man not being marked 71% of the time. Like, I mean, that's a huge, huge thing. So then contested kickouts, 51% is for Began and only 29%. And I thought the big one as well was, so when you go to percentage of contested kickouts won, right, Began is at 75%. Mm. So when he's going contested kickouts, and we know Began is very aggressive on these contested kickouts, he's putting them out into space a lot of the time. They're contested, even other ones with somebody up behind you. He's at 75% success with contested kickouts. Whereas Cluxton is only at 52% at contested, which I was a bit surprised at there. Like, I mean, so like, you can have your opinion, and stats hopefully will back up your opinion. And thankfully, that's what what's after happening here. Because if the stats disagreed with your opinion, you're like, Jesus, I'm obviously missing something as I'm watching these games. And there's no competition for me now. So they both conceded 6 goals. Errors leading to goals: Rory Began 1, Cluxton 2. So Cluxton obviously had the error against Comer, and he had an error against Offaly in Amore Park, which was a hammering, so it wouldn't have got much publicity. It was another high ball. That's always been a weakness of Cluxton, and I don't see how teams don't use him more. Began's big error was against Fermanagh, leading to goals. He obviously had the big error as well where he booted the ball away against Tyrone, and like, that can't be ignored either. It was an awful kind of brain fart.
Otherwise, 45 metres out there.
But that's not goalkeeping. Do you know what I mean? That's not goalkeeping for me. Then again, you could argue that his frees aren't goalkeeping, but a lot of goalkeepers do them now. They almost have become a part of goalkeeper, and are an extra string to your bow. But kicking last minute spectacular winning points are not really the kind of function of a goalkeeper.
Yeah, like, Cluxton hasn't done anything equivalent to sort of put him ahead of Began in that front. Yeah, like, I do feel a little sympathy for Cluxton. I think Began deserved it, and like, the stats prove the contested kickouts. I thought he has become the best kicker in Ireland off the ground anyway, and that's saying a lot because of who Cluxton is. But I think Cluxton's brief is just to get the ball to the man.
Exactly.
No matter where he is, if it's a cornerback, Dublin just want the ball in their hands and then they'll start playing. And so he just takes the easy, uncontested kick out. Not because he's afraid to go for it, but just because that's what he has to
do.
And
another thing is that the teams might not press up as aggressively. Mm. They might almost give Cluxton the cornerback rather than have Cluxton punish you further up the field. Yeah. And Began almost doesn't have that level of respect that Cluxton has. So, like, I mean, there are other factors working against Cluxton here, you know, as to why he's just tapping at a cornerback, and tapping at a cornerback is working against him.
Yeah, that's it. But with the contested kickouts as well, a lot of that kind of owes to the kickout strategy for the various teams. So, like, while a lot of teams give Dublin the kickouts because they're probably going to get it away anyway, you have to give them credit for the fact that he can get 70% uncontested kickouts away. Do you know what I mean? But that's it. I mean, like, I suppose what the stat we didn't mention there as well, I know that you said that kicking frees isn't necessarily goalkeeping, but when you kick 18 points in the championship, that's a pretty big deal for a keeper as well. But it all comes back to, like, I think we touched on this last week, that the thing that was being held in Stephen Cluxton's favour was, like, can you tell me that in the last 5 years has there been a better keeper than Stephen Cluxton? Well, no, there hasn't. But was he the best keeper last year? No, Rory Began was. So that should have been the end of the debate. But as you said, it's good when you have the stats to just back it up.
Yeah, no, definitely. And, like, I mean, Cathal O'Kane spoke in the piece as well about using goalkeepers, and that's what we talked an awful lot. We predicted a big year for goalkeepers at the start of this league. Didn't really work outside of Graham Brodie, like, spectacular goalkeepers. And he used an example of the Australian rules, which I don't pay an awful lot of attention to the Australian rules, but he was saying that the Australians used their goalkeeper to mark the corner forward and let an extra man up the field as an overlap. And when you think about it, right, you obviously can't do this in soccer because goalkeeper has unique ability to catch the ball and can do things other players can't. In GAA, every outfield player can do the function of a goalkeeper. There's nothing to prohibit an outfield player doing the role of a goalkeeper. So if the goalkeeper pushes up into full back position, full back to centre back, and suddenly you've got an extra man up the field, there's no real risk to that, because you're just falling one back. And why are we not getting to the point where we see, because often you think with Graham Brodie, while it's extremely exciting, it looks a little bit random at times as well. Like, I mean, he'll take, when he takes a short kick out and goes for the return, that's not random and that's a good tactic. But like sending him off maybe without the ball, while, or sending the full back off without the ball while he marks a full back, we've not really seen, you know, kind of very obvious tactic of using your corner back or losing your goalkeeper as a full back.
Yeah, and I did think sometimes that Graham Brodie was almost doing it for the sake of it. He was getting on the ball but not really making any ground, because like people knew that what he was doing, like, you know, so they all backed off him, whereas if he had let somebody else push on, then somebody would have been free and the whole team would have had a push back.
But it can be difficult with the more defensive systems. If all these new rules come in and the game goes back to a more man-on-man game, well then the goalkeeper can cause all sorts of problems.
But that, like, that's something, like the way Began plays, and it's something that Cahir mentioned, it should be counted, because he is an extra man for Monaghan. We've seen him set up like be the quarterback sometimes, they come out and get the ball, and Cluxton has stopped doing that as much as he probably used to, like where it's just Dublin are just going forward. But again, maybe he's just a victim of how good and efficient Dublin are,
I think. And another thing that needs to be pointed out about Cluxton is that Cluxton does not have an ego. Now, we know he does no media. I don't really care about that media. But, like, I mean, what Cluxton does, tapping to the corner back, there's no huge skill involved in that. I could do that. Any of the three of us could do that, right? He's tapping at the corner back. But Cluxton has such an array of kick passing. It's almost like telling a corner forward, don't score, just lay it off. Do you know what I mean? He's just doing a simple thing and not showcasing the talent that we know he has for his team. Do you know what I mean? He's sacrificing all-stars for his team because that's the instruction. And for a man that has done what he has in the game, you know, you almost forgive him and say, Jim, I want to kick a few more out. Like, I mean, I'm losing out on all-stars here. But look, Cluxton doesn't do that, and it's a sacrifice.
Do you understand how good I am, Jim?
Look, 10 years ago with Shane Ryan and Kieran Whelan, I was whacking the wings with these.
This is insulting to me.
But yeah, I think that should be pointed out. And what do you think of the Clark Cluxton one in the second year, Connor? We didn't have you on the podcast. No, you're green and red.
I thought over the 2 years, I thought between the 2 years, Clark shouldn't have got it 2 years in a row. And I think even when you go back to 2016, like, you can't get away from the fact that Clark was actually dropped for the second game.
Yeah.
Now, I know there was a specific goalkeeping issue, but then I know there... See, because they're voted for, because, well, they were voted for the Players of the Year, sorry, and Clark was on the list for 2017. But it's just, I know there was an element of tokenism about it, and like I hate saying that as a Mayo fan, because David Clark was brilliant as well. But it's just that, like, oh, Cluxton has won so many already, he's won the All Ireland, so nearly give it to David Clark. Like, there wasn't much in it, but I would have given it to Cluxton as well.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. And you know, there'd be no debates now. If Cluxton had just got one of those two,
that's it. Because
it does look bad that he hasn't got one since 2013. Like, you know, it does. It's outrageous, really. We're not going to fall into the same trap of, well, he's the best goalie in Ireland. So the new kick-out rule, Conan, you will be very happy with this. So it's being tweaked, and I think this, you know, everybody should get a lot of, the standing committee on playing rules should get a lot of credit for this, because they said they're proposals.
Yeah.
They're not set in stone. They needed to be trialled, they needed to be tweaked and refined and made better through, you know, practice. So the Sun is reporting this, that the proposed new rule, so they're reportedly thinking of proposed changes to the football kick-out, relaxing the restriction of number of players allowed between the 45-metre lines. So the Sun is reporting that it has been trialled in college games, and it's led to the conclusion that policing the zones was impractical and there should be no limit on the number of players between the lines. Now, you deserve credit here, Conan, because you called this straight away. I tried to argue that it's well manageable, but they're after trialling it, and as it turns out, I don't say this very often, you were right and I was wrong. So they're going to let as many as
savour that for a second.
Just retire now. So they're going to let as many out between the 2 45s. The only difference now is that instead of the kick out going from the 13 metre line, it's going to go from the 20. So if I don't care if you're a junior goalie, if you can't get from 20 to 45, even you can get there, Conan. And then,
no, well, hang on a second.
So we'll throw this to you, Conan. Are you happy with this now?
Yeah, like, as I said, like, at the time as well, I was looking at this just thinking, it wasn't like a mad against change. I was just looking at it thinking, I don't think this is going to work. Like, and I like the tweet somebody sent us saying, so your argument whether David or Owen Merchant and David Moran would skin each other was absolutely pointless.
Yeah.
Which it turns out it was. It probably was pointless all along. But yeah, like, I think bringing it to the 20 metre line, like, not only does it help you reach the 45, but it sort of negates another 10 metres that you can't kick it short. And 10 metres the whole way across the pitch, so it's a big area. Like, so you're
a big area. And think of how an aggressive kicker can get. Like, Began can reach the far. Yeah.
Put it over.
Yeah.
You highlighted the square in Croke Park, didn't you? How, like, how big an area was going to be. It looked absolutely massive.
Yeah.
But, like, now, like, all it is really is that you have to kick it beyond the 45, which is good. And, like, I know that when you had David Hassan on, he was talking about that Jack McCaffrey play. And he was, Cluxton kicked it to Jack McCaffrey down the wing. But we couldn't have seen that if Jack McCaffrey wasn't allowed inside the 45 initially, you know, but now he is allowed inside the 45, so you can still play that lovely pass.
And yeah.
I do think the evolution of goalkeepers has been some of the best, like, thing we've seen in Gaelic football over the last 7 years, so yeah. This is sort of preserving it a little bit.
And if this rule had been in 2015, 2016, Mayo would be All-Ireland champions because Henley wouldn't have replaced Clark,
and
he would never have given away that penalty, and Mayo would be All-Ireland champions.
That's true, but then they brought Robbie Henley in specifically for a type of kick out, and Lee Keegan wouldn't have got his goal, so I'm going to leave it at that.
Okay, right. Oh, did it lead to Lee Keegan's
goal? Lee Keegan's
goal,
yeah.
Did you see, that was never talked about, was it? Now Martin Brettany, what do you mean by that?
Interestingly, remember they did that revised rules tournament last week down in Dunshaughlin, and we had one of the guys, Mick Corey, in the office, like, ringing the secretary in Dunshaughlin to see how it went, and he said the only thing they really had an issue with was the three hand passes. He said some refs and the players were just getting confused. Maybe it's just teething problems.
Hand passes, yeah.
See, I won't accept. I'm not accepting that one. I will not. No, I have to see that with my own two eyes.
I'm not giving an opinion.
All right. So Micheál Martin has been talking about the GA fixtures. Not the Micheál Martin that you might think. It's Micheál Martin. He's chairman of the GA Fixtures Review Committee. So he's talking about, see, it's been mooted for a long time about completing the year's fixtures in 12 months. And Pádraig Duffy supported that. I strongly, strongly support it. Jesus Christ, Portlaoise could be All-Ireland club champions in 2004-05 had we not had that 13-week break and me piss off for 7 weeks. 7 weeks of it. I shouldn't even laugh.
He was the captain as well.
I deeply regret that now. But at the same time, the 12 months thing makes sense to me. It's closure on a year and it's starting a new year. And, like, I mean, any proposal that is worth its salt should have the whole year finishing up in the same year. So he's saying that it's not possible. He's saying that it's too tight a time frame for dual counties and that 13 month seasons would be more feasible. See, I don't know if Micheál Martin, every time I see Micheál Martin I just think of Fianna Fáil leader, but maybe he's talking under the current inter-county season. Like, I mean, because any restructure that I would like would have the inter-county season over at the end of July. The CPA agree on that. And then you have that. Maybe you would buy back your extra month there, you know, rather than if I do agree that finishing the inter-county season at the end of August, you're probably pushing to get All-Ireland finals on. It's absolutely doable. Mm. It's just the two All-Ireland champions if they're dual counties. If Tip win the hurling, for example, and it holds up their football. They're really struggling to get that done, I'd say, you know, by the end of the year. But, like, I mean, I don't know, 13 months or that.
What are they going to get done in an extra month that they can't do in 12 months? It seems like it would be easy enough to just pack in, like, 4 weeks into an end of the year rather than adding another month on. I saw him on as well about moving the club finals back to January. I don't know why they couldn't be moved back to December, just within the calendar year. There seems to be a reluctance to move dates like that, move the club finals away from St. Patrick's Day, as there was to move the All-Ireland finals away from September. Mm. But, like, it's just, while there's an element to that, like, you kind of miss the finals in September, but you'll get over that within a couple of years, and as long as it makes sense within the calendar.
Yeah. The thing about the All-Ireland finals in St. Patrick's Day are completely not doable anymore. I prefer them in January than the March, even though it is a nice tradition, but the way the leagues are now, it's just a mess. There's too much going on then, and we saw with Malloy from Corrifin rushing off from an All-Ireland semi-final. You have club, you have inter-county, and you have Sigerson. It's too much.
Yeah.
And Malloy never got back in with Galway, you know, really, because he had been with his club for too long, and only Ian Burke from Corrifin amazingly was on the Galway team. Why is that? You know, because they're bloody slogging away with their club for too long, missed the whole league, they got to a league final, and they're playing catch-up.
How do you feel though about playing, like, if you were in a club and you got the All-Ireland final and you're playing your most important game ever in December or January? Now, I know we can't have all the finals in September.
If you're playing in Croke Park, it's different. I would say
Croke Park pitch would be perfect. That's one thing. And another thing is you play your provincial final, which isn't to be sniffed at. Like, if that for any club, a provincial final and All-Ireland final, like, is there much difference? There's still huge occasions.
Yeah.
And there's still, so it's okay for the provincial final to be played on the 8th of December, but if everything moves back and that happens to be the All-Ireland final, that's okay, you know, and played in Croke Park on a perfect pitch. I don't think there's a problem
I think it nearly suffers as well, because once the turn of the year, the National League has started and focus has kind of shifted to that,
goes away,
whereas at the moment it's real buzz about provincial
championships,
like,
it loses all momentum with supporters. We did a live show before the All-Ireland club finals last year in Coppers, and it was our worst attended live show. And I was thinking, like, I mean, there was four teams involved and it was a good lineup, and I was just thinking, like, there's no real interest here. But there is now when you hit past provincial, and that's exactly like what happened to me going off to Thailand. I had 12-13 weeks to punch in. In my head I was like, I can do everything here, this is like you know, this is perfect, you know, I can do whatever I want for 7 weeks and come back, and you know, it wasn't a reality.
And before the club All-Ireland final, you only have four games in 3 months. That's across both hurling and football, so you have four semi-finals in 3 months from December, January, February, March, so the momentum is gone completely, and we're all just raving about the league again.
Exactly. Just another thing Micheál Martin said, right, so he's talking about shortening the season, he's talking about the whole thing. So he says everything has to be balanced against the promotional aspect of the game. We got quite positive feedback to the April window at our May seminar, despite the weather having been poor. The picture you get might be different than what we get next month, but every county is so different. But I'll tell you what annoys me, right, and that's this exact line here, and it's trotted out all the time, the promotional aspect of the game. And this is why there was such opposition to the All-Ireland's been moved from September. There's such opposition, there will be opposition if you ever want to shorten it into January. We're losing promotional aspects of the game. But RT do no, GSL RT only highlights rights on a Sunday night. Sky don't use their highlights rights. They don't promote the game in any way, even when the championship's on. So why is that just completely brushed? But all this promotional aspect of the game, none of them cover the club, only TG4. Where's the promotional aspect of the club, the grassroots? Like, if you're worried about the promotional aspect of the game, look at bloody Ballyea and Ballygunner and have a Sunday game that night and demand that your rights holders promote this game. Then you're not losing out on promotional aspect. Because I'll tell you whatever the week before there was the Classico, there was Everton Manchester United and there was a hurling game. Now, fair enough, that's going to struggle against those, but last weekend that Ballygunner, that trumped anything else that went on Sunday. But it was on TG4, you know, or TG Cahir, and there was no big deal that night. Trust me, provincial club matches can keep the promotional aspect of the game going, but give them the prestige that they deserve. Finish it in the calendar year when the intercounty finishes at the end of July. Promote the club. Now we're in the club season, and then when county finals finish, let's make a big deal out of all the provincial clubs. And, like, I mean, I don't see you losing any promotional aspect. It can get really big, really big.
I think that can be said for anything. Like, you know, like, if they promoted the National League properly and stopped telling people it's a secondary. Yeah, but I mean, like, as a whole, like look at Sky, what they do with the Premier League. Yeah. It's different, but if we stop telling people the National League doesn't matter and it's all about championship, promote it and tell them it's a big deal. And then if you build it, people will come.
I strongly believe in October, November, if you put it on, people will come. For example, the podcast numbers here. Last year, we just did one show a year during the club, and now this year we're doing two. And the numbers have gone up rather than go down. Do you know that you would think maybe doing two, you might dilute them across the week? They haven't. They're actually stronger doing it twice than they were doing it once. Yeah. Like, I mean, put it on and they will come. Eamon O'Hara isn't a happy camper, lad. So he had to drop Cian Searles. Cian's only a minor, so I probably pronounced that name wrong. Everyone keeps tweeting me pronunciations. There was two after last Monday. It's terrible. Like, I mean, the amount of pronunciations I'm getting wrong. Cian Searles. He's a minor, right? So Eamon O'Hara is the manager of Turl Strahan. Turlstrand,
yeah.
And they lost to Ballintubber in the Connacht Club, only by a point. So he's very disappointed with the Connacht Council. So he says, you talk about player welfare and everything. This is Eamon. I had a discussion with one of the guys from the Connacht Council, and for him to say that minors don't reflect what happens at senior level is a complete disgrace. It's a complete narrow-mindedness that is out there. So Cian Searles is a minor, and he had played two minor provincial matches the week leading up to the Ballintubber game. So he played on the Wednesday and the Friday. Now, I didn't even know provincial minor matches were a thing. They weren't a thing in my day anyways, but Conan tells me that they're a thing in Ulster, and they're obviously a thing in Connacht as well. I think that's ridiculous anyways. That
it's very recent, I think.
It's very recent, yeah, and they're just adding to the fixture chaos. So this Cian, he said that he's down in UL, and he's trying to get on the freshers team. And since the county final, in the 2 weeks between the county final and the Ballintubber game, he played 6 games. So, like, Eamon O'Hara deserves a lot of credit for resting this young fella in a game that he ended up only losing by a point, you know? But, like, I mean, it's hard to know what to say about this, because I can see from the Connacht Council, if they keep holding up senior games for minor games, how can they run off competitions? And then on the other flip side of it, like, Eamon says, in rural clubs right now, teams are scraping to get minors. You know, they need their minors.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, see, this is how the GAA fixtures get so complicated. Because if they had held up that minor game or senior game for this, we'd be like, yeah, sure, it'll never be played off.
Yeah.
And then they don't. They play a minor and say, look, well, you're just going to have to take the hit that he's a minor and you shouldn't be. We can't hold up these games for him. Then Eamon's given out that he doesn't have him for a senior team. Yeah. So I don't know the solution to that.
Was the guy from the Connacht Council trying to make the point that he should be okay to play the senior game because senior doesn't reflect what goes on at minor? Is that what he was trying to say?
I would hope not.
That'd be a terrible attitude.
I would hope the Connacht Council fellow was saying, look, minors shouldn't be holding up seniors. Yeah. That they should be. You shouldn't even be playing him.
Eamon O'Hara wanted to play. There was a free space, I think, this week. This week after the game play the minor game.
Well, he played the minor game on the Wednesday and the Friday. He wanted the Friday minor game to be moved to the following week, which isn't the most outlandish request.
Seems reasonable.
But they didn't do it.
But big decision by Eamon O'Hara because, well, like, first of all, fair play to him for looking after his welfare. But the same guy, with Ballintubber lost by a point for a start, the same guy, Cian Searles, scored 1-1 from cornerback in the county final. I was just looking up there, so he's obviously pretty handy.
Right.
So, and obviously would have made a big difference too, because I think a couple of prominent Turlestrand players ended up getting injured early in the game too. So that was a big decision for Eamon O'Hara to make, because he probably knew that the game was going to be so close, and somebody like him could have made a big difference.
He does deserve a lot of credit for taking his welfare, because a lot of managers just play this young fella. He's young enough, he'll recover. He didn't do it.
It's a very hard one though, because the equivalent to Cian Searles in another county, maybe like Galway, is he plays hurling as well, and you know he's playing for all these age groups at hurling, and
it screws it up. We see examples in Tip and different counties where it just turns into a mess.
And I can see where Connacht are coming from, like, what can they do about that? Like, if you're going to play him on these different age groups, and I know Cian's not doing it, but if there's an other equivalent, I remember Mark Lynch is playing hurling for under 16s, minors and seniors, same with football, same with his school.
Yeah.
Do you know, like, what do you do about it? And maybe,
well, that's why, is that not what you do with it? Is that's why the under 17 has been moved to under 17. Under 17s are precluded from playing senior level, so it's stopped this minors holding up senior championships.
So we're getting there in a sense, but like, if Cian Searles is still going to be playing for his minors and seniors, like, Connacht are in a tough position. Like, these games have to be run. Does the club maybe just prioritise and say, listen, the game against Ballintubber is more important? Like, the Connacht minor game would be class, but at the end of the day, this is what we're bringing them through for, to play in Connacht Senior Football Championship.
Unless I didn't look into it enough, they must have been hoping to get to a final or something, because you would imagine that the senior would trump the minor.
Yeah, because the idea of having good underage players is to get them to senior and have the product there.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no, it's an interesting one. It definitely gives you an idea of the difficulties that it is complex.
Oh, yeah.
It's really complex, the GAA fixtures. There's no doubt about that. There's some news in Kildare here, lads, and there's some good and bad news for Kildare. We know two selectors have moved on, and we know two new ones, including Tom Cribben, have moved into their place. So it looks like Ona Flaherty, who would have been one of the main forwards during Kieran McGeaney's reign, he's going to come back into the squad. He's only 29, so he'd been around for so long, you would think he would have been older. He was on the frees for a lot of years. So that good news is kind of being offset by the news that Johnny Byrne, their wing back, he's not going to be on the panel next year. He says he faces new challenges in the coming months and goals to fulfil that will require 100% from me. So you can just presume maybe that's something to do with his work or something like that. He's been a little bit vague about what that is. Mick O'Grady is going travelling. So the two of them are out, two starters. And now there's speculation that Daniel Flynn might opt off the squad as well. So Daniel Flynn has said, I'll be playing with the college for the next few weeks and thinking things over. I haven't decided either way at this point. I have to say, when I read Daniel Flynn Night Might Be Round, I was pissed off.
Yeah.
I love Daniel Flynn. I love watching him. We had him on the show. I really like him as an interviewee. I won't say as a person because I don't know him, but he was great as an interviewee, real natural fella. And he's such an exciting player. I'm like, Jesus, Daniel, you're just coming off an All-Star nomination. Yeah. Just keep going. Kildare did well. And I'd imagine being a manager after trying to build on a good year and then lose Johnny Byrne, Mick O'Grady and Daniel Flynn from your starting team. It'd be just so demoralising, wouldn't it?
Even just going on the interview that you did with him earlier, Niamh, he seems like a very kind of independent minded fella as well. So while some people, if they think about travelling, the county manager might be like, hang around, and then they might be, okay, well, I won't go. But Daniel Flynn strikes me the kind of guy that if he makes a decision, he kind of stick to it. So like it'd be pity if we miss him for the year. But like at the same time, can you blame these lads with the schedules they want to do for a year? And it's all well and good to say, oh, wait till the end of your career. But circumstances, no more than Johnny Byrne there, like your job, like family, they might dictate that you mightn't get the chance to do it later in the year. And if you take a year out, come back, even like Owen O'Flaherty there, rejuvenated and refreshed. So pity to see Daniel Flynn if he does go. But hard to blame him at the same time.
Hard to blame him when the ERSI report has come out and said that they're looking at 31 hours outside of their own jobs.
Yeah.
And then you start thinking, that's a lot. Even though players said that they're happy enough to do it, it's still a huge, huge commitment. And like, I know I couldn't do it. Like, I mean, it's just, I wouldn't be able to do it. I could do it for a year and make a big push. Hopefully things go well for me this year. And I might have to take a year off. I don't know how to do it. And you look, especially from Daniel Flynn, very, very, very outside chance of winning a Leinster, no chance of winning an All-Ireland. So what's he going to do it for? You know what I mean? And now, I'm not saying even championship structures, they'll be in Division 1 Kildare anyways. It's not like we're saying, well, they'd win in Division 2. He's still going to struggle to win something.
And it's a lot of work.
It's a lot of bloody work. You know, maybe he wants to play with Johnstown Bridge, and like how they don't do well at club level or haven't won one, I don't know. I don't. And maybe he's in his last year in Maynooth anyways, and he just wants to study. So like, I mean, look, as a fan, I'm massively disappointed if he does it. I don't want to put pressure on the poor fella because it's his life, which is a lot more important.
I don't think you should put any pressure on somebody like that who's talking that way. Like, just give him a couple of months off. Like, I don't know about you, but like, I've never played county, but sometimes when I get to the end of the season, it's this club, I just be like, I can't wait for this thing to be over. Like, and you get sick of seeing the same faces and like having somebody else dictate your time. So you're looking forward to the whole thing being over. You'd nearly half retire at the end of every season. Like, you know, so you just need a few weeks or months just away.
And then
from
after the break, you're raring to go again.
You're mad for it again. Yeah. Like,
into
you know,
the new year. Yeah,
just give him some space. Like, and listen, Kildare aren't supposed to be training until the start of December anyway, so it should be fine. Like,
but they're back training on the 8th of December when they're out in the Auburn Cup. So maybe Daniel's a bit like, I'm not entertaining that. let's let this decision tide me over until next January. So this is a new news. Matty Kenny was announced as the Dublin hurling manager. And Matty Kenny obviously managed Coolah to two All-Irelands, but he also managed Galway's under-21s to an All-Ireland, and he was a selector with Ger Cunningham, who this has a knock-on effect towards. So that was in 2012. He was a selector with Cunningham. So Cunningham now is in the race to get the Roscommon job. So Cunningham obviously hasn't much of an ego because he knows publicly he's down about 10th or 11th on the list. And he's like, I don't really mind, I'll take it. Done. So Cunningham's more known as a hurling manager, but he did manage Gary Castle to an All-Ireland club final appearance in 2012. They beat St. Bridget's in the final of that. So absolutely shocked St. Bridget's, who had beaten us after extra time in the semi-final. So, like, I mean, that was a huge win. And then they went on to beat St. Bridget's in the All-Ireland semi-final and drew across McGlenn in the final. So he has a very good record on that evidence. Gary Castle are no, you know, schmucks at club level anyways, but that was a big achievement for him to do that. It looks like he's going to be the Roscommon manager. So that's it. So I don't know why... Have we talked about Roscommon? We must have, Conor. Why they're not an attractive job for people?
Oh, yeah, we talked about before when maybe we mentioned Aidan O'Rourke was in for the job there a couple of weeks ago, and it looked on the verge that he was going to get it. And he had a very good team in place with him. He had actually Carl Lacey as coach.
Well, he didn't commit in time. See,
that must have been it. Yeah, but like I just wonder how Roscommon are going to sell this, because it's with all due respect to Anthony Cunningham, it is clear that he's well down the list.
You were the first person on our list.
do they say that? Because in
well, it's
a
fake news that covers everything. Yeah. Fake news, Anthony.
Go down the Trump route, yeah.
So, like, I mean, you can get away with anything now. Fake news and
fake news media.
Probably didn't mean any of that.
Yeah, listen, Anthony, you were the very first on the list. Yeah. Look, here's the list. You're first on a whole load of scratched out names. But like, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I mean, am I allowed to say this? But like, I mean, the idea always is that Roscommon have a huge financial backer. Is that not? Is that out there, or is no? Or am I just?
I'm not sure. That's me. Sorry. Wasn't Kevin McStay giving out about the finances there lately though? And yeah, saying that like how like he was saying that like it cost them so much per training session.
But backer is in the manager is in brown paper envelope under the table. Backer,
give us the answers.
Not going to shed any light on the situation. I thought when you mentioned about a backer that was providing all those big buses for them and all that sort of stuff.
No, because that's what I. Maybe they obviously don't, because like I mean if they had this backer that I thought they had, then they wouldn't be struggling to get a manager. There would be like a queue of managers looking to do it. So it looks maybe Anthony Cunningham. Just on Matty Kenny is that Mark Shute, Colm Cronin and Paul Shute are all All-Ireland winners, double All-Ireland winners with Coola, and none of the three of them have committed to the Hurlers. So they'll be three huge additions to the Dublin Hurlers if Matty Kenny can get them on board. You'd imagine that he would, although Mark Shute, who's a brilliant, brilliant hurler, has just been bench warming with the footballers for the last 2 years, which I find bizarre. He must be enjoying just the A versus B games at the weekends. Like, I mean, they're obviously very competitive games, and that must be what he's training towards, because I cannot comprehend people who train, and I hate some trainings you don't mind, but you're always training and you're convincing yourself doing the hard running, well, this'll really work in my favour with 10 minutes to go in the match. And I'd always constantly be telling myself this worth doing, and I never felt more confident on a football field than when I was flying fit, because I knew I'd play well. If you're flying fit, you're completely in control of your own performance.
Yeah.
But all this psychology is based on the fact that you're going to start that game.
Yeah.
If you have no notion of getting on the game, why the hell are you training? Honestly, like, that was always what I had lived my kind of football life by, that being on the team, what's the point otherwise? Seriously. Honestly, I know it's a panel game now, but what is the point in doing those runs and breaking your balls and doing the gym work? And what's trying to what gets you over that last bench press to push that up? Nothing if you're not on the team. You'll push it up if you're like, well, I need to get, you know, I need to push this because this is money in the bank. What's the point if you're not on the team?
You must have never given it's a 30-man game speech.
Ah, nonsense. Sure, I used to remember, like, I was such a starting 15 snob, I barely even talked to some of the folks. Oh, I was the ultimate snob. Sure, I was wrote on the website last year, like, we'd win a county final, and do you know the way all the subs run in onto the field? Like, I wouldn't even
get off the edge.
You haven't even put your hands.
No one's ever heard of you.
But genuinely, now, I don't want to be too disrespectful the subs, because I got a bit of a backlash, but I genuinely didn't want to ignore the subs, but I absolutely wanted to go around to the fellas that might have kicked a pint or did a block down. They're the ones I wanted to hug. I didn't want to be surrounded by fellas who hadn't gotten on the field. Is that terrible?
Yeah. there are a lot of subs here on a trajectory who are, you know, trying to push in, and they will eventually, so that's where the last bench press gets them. But I know what you mean, there's a lot of guys,
that's what gets them, right,
who are just far outs that probably won't ever get in. Yeah. Like, and that's
basically
tough.
Mark Shute on the Dublin Footballers, I don't want to be disrespectful to Mark Shute, because he's a stonewall starter on the Hurlers. That's why I can't comprehend it. I'd always be one for play, like, will you be a sub on the senior team or a starter on the intermediates? I'd pick intermediate starter any day of the week. Any day of the week. I want to play, I want to enjoy it. So anyways, this, I'm after completely kind of losing my track. This is Mark Shute. You'd love to see him back with the Hurlers, Colm Cronin and Paul Shute as well. Conor Callaghan. Can Matty Kenny work the Oracle and get Con back into the mix on the Hurlers? Probably not. But like, I mean, I'd love just a directive to all the Dublin Jewel fellas. Just go back play with the Hurlers for 1 year. When they win, how many footballs will sate their appetite? How many will they need? They're given to five in a row. We'll make a deal with Kieran Kilkenny, Conor Callaghan and these lads now. What other one?
Dear McConnelly back.
Cormac Costello is another one. Dear McConnelly. I'm not sure if he inter-county Jewel standard, is he?
Oh, he absolutely is.
But anyways, we can make a deal with these fellas that if you win five in a row, you'll give the Dublin Hurlers 1 year.
Wouldn't it be great if they just became a dual county, like, you know, and just started letting both play for both teams and really sort of leading the way in that sense then? Like, so Conor Callaghan was playing for the Hurlers and the Footballers and they just worked it between themselves.
Yeah, the day the Jewel man is gone, Conan, yeah. We know that. Anyways, we're going to talk to a Jewel man next. That's a good segue, Conan, you set me up for. So we'll talk to Portlaoise's Catter Healy, and that's next.
Somebody said it's as ugly as Marty Morrissey at football.
We probably, in fairness, he wouldn't know a penalty if it bit him in the arse. I mean,
what is the point of this? They swear allegiance to the cult of Cairn.
But I tell you what, you can forget about Sean Kavanagh as far as he's a man.
Is managing Mead at some stage in for the rest of your life a pebble in your shoe that you want to get out?
No, I think I've got over that.
Have you?
If I went to do that, sure, who'd keep manners on Joe Brawley on the Sunday game? And you couldn't expose the nation to him on his own, could you?
All right, so probably the busiest man in the country at this time of the year is Portlaoise's Catter Healy, who plays Jewel for Portlaoise and lives in London. I think you were back 8 weeks in a row, Catter, leading up to the two county finals. How are you holding up?
Yeah, I think something like that anyway, Wooly. Yeah, I'm holding up grand. I had a weekend off from it after the football final, so back to the grind now again. It was home last 2 weekends ago, home for the hurling last week and coming home again this week, so it's all go.
Yeah, it's definitely all go. There's no doubt. You rushed off back to London after the county football final, one of the lads was saying to me. So you missed all the celebrations and the O'Dempsey's lads and everything coming in.
Yeah, that's killer stuff. You know, I was nearly getting in a bad mood getting on the plane. You know, the buzz of the county final was nearly been worn off by missing out on the celebrations. I was getting in a bad mood going back, but over here you can't really say to an employer. They wouldn't understand if you said... Well, we had a hurling match or a football match there yesterday. Can I have the next day off?
Yeah, so did you stay back? You used up your credits after the county hurling final, did you? And you couldn't do it again?
No, we don't have any. It's a little bit different here as well. Like, we don't have course days. Like, in Ireland, you can do the courses during the summer to get a few course days during the year. But for here, there's nothing. You just, if you want a day off for an exceptional circumstance, you just have to ask for it. And it wouldn't really count over here if I said that was the exceptional circumstance.
Yeah, no, so you're
there's not a hope.
So you're a teacher in London, and a lot of people listening to this will go, Jesus, has Healy got no pull in Laois to get back teaching in Portlaoise or in Laois to make his life easier? But the plot thickens again that you had to go and fall in love in London, and this is completely this has complicated your GAA career completely.
you know too much about me now for this interview. Yeah, that's true, Wooly. I suppose my girlfriend's from Italy, so I suppose the stalemate we're at is I'm not moving to Rome and she's not moving to Portlaoise, so London is the stalemate we're at the minute.
Yeah, well, I can see where she's coming from, not wanting to move to Portlaoise, in fairness to her. But like, I mean, I was talking on the podcast here, Healy, after the football final, and I didn't obviously see all of the field, but it looked like there were kind of muted celebrations, and I was making the point that Portlaoise have won a lot of them, and maybe a little bit like Cara Finn and Cross McGlenn, you wouldn't see the same outpouring of emotion. And then I saw the pictures of you and Ricky Maher after the match, and certainly that didn't apply to you, so I didn't see you. But like, I mean, you had a huge outpouring of emotion because you missed all last year, obviously with injury.
Yeah, I suppose, sure, we all know what happened against Tralee in the county final 2 years ago, and I was playing that day. You know, you're kind of, that was a devastating loss, because we're not getting another go at 10 in a row, and certainly I'm not going to get another go at 10 in a row. So I was all geared up for 2017 to try put it right, and then got injured and missed out the whole year. So I'd missed out on them, the lads winning the trophy back, which was great. But then even this year, then I was kind of, you know, I still kind of had to put that Tralee game right in my own head and my own, get the demons of that loss away. So that's kind of what that was about, why that one was was a bit special.
Yeah, so you did your cruciate in the first round of the hurling championships, so you missed out. You had to watch the hurlers get relegated and you watched the footballers kind of, you know, win the county title back after losing to Stradbally, and you weren't part of any of that. So, like, I mean, it was a complete disaster. And then you're over in London, and we know injuries are a lonely time anyways, but you're having to rehab it over in London.
Yeah, well, that's it. You know, I couldn't. The hurlers got relegated, and that was a disaster. And I'm a kind of senior player on the team. I felt nearly half guilty about them getting relegated because I felt guilty about being injured, and they were getting relegated. And then, sure, I suppose as delighted as you are that Portlaoise win, and you want nothing but them to win, it's not the same as playing. Like, it's not being injured on the sideline. It's just not the same as playing. So the buzz just isn't the same for me personally. It didn't feel the same. So. And then, yeah, over here in London then, and you're rehabbing. And, you know, it kind of worked both ways. I was only talking to a fella about this recently, and we were saying, like, you're alone here for the rehab, and you can't tip into the physio with the county team twice a week or whatever and get your feedback and updated. But then the other side of it was, I kind of had the whole year written off, so when the games were being played at the weekend, I didn't feel as much I was missing out. I'd kind of written it off in my head, and I was away from any kind of talk about it and that. So
I get you.
It kind of worked a bit. The injury, being here for the injury, kind of worked a little bit of both ways.
But I suppose the physio thing is a big thing as well, though, because without getting that constant treatment on it and being looked after, like, did that lengthen the comeback?
I don't think so. Now, I was about 10 months from the operation to getting back. So, like, you know, the kind of 9 months seems to be the kind of gold standard, you know, the kind of, that's the aim for most people when they do it. And I got back a month after that. I don't know if it held me up a lot, but certainly there were some things, you know. I had a good physio here now, an Irish guy, Dennis Murphy, and he couldn't have been any more helpful, and he was always on the other end of the phone if I needed something. But I couldn't afford to go in and take up an hour of his time in the clinic three times a week, which you would have got if you were in with the county team. You could just go into the trainings and you get your feedback. You know, I kind of had to figure some things out myself, or what isn't working here, and I had to kind of adjust things myself, whereas I couldn't just call into him and get it sorted, you know.
Right, okay, so how do you feel now? Do you back at full whack again, injury completely behind you, and you know cardio, fitness back up full whack again?
Yeah, I think so. It's mid-July I got back. I got back for the second round of that club hurling. No, sorry, my first game back was the first round of the football championship. I come on at half time, so the knee kind of, it'd feel a bit dodgy the first maybe 5-6 weeks you're back. It'd be getting a bit sore, and you're kind of in your own head, you'd be kind of worrying, you know, is it all right? But I'm completely over that now. Like, the knee wouldn't even come into me thinking now playing at all.
So you're back centre back now, so you must be really enjoying that. That's where you started back in 2004. You're only 17. Then you were back given the nightmare man marking job. So you're back.
There's more. Yeah. Get stuck in the corner and you've only one job to do. Yeah, it's nice to be out there. There's more of the action there, and I feel you can probably influence the game a bit more from there. If things aren't going well for you defensively, you can try get on a ball and make something happen going forward, or vice versa. If something didn't happen going right going forward, you can just knuckle down and try mark your man. So there's a bit more scope to influence the game from there anyway.
I was reading a stat that I was very surprised with after the county final. You obviously won your 12th county title against the Dempseys, and yourself and Craig Rogers were the two oldest on the team. I couldn't believe it. Like, I mean, I know the two of you since you were 17 in 2004 when you made your debuts, and now you're the oldest. There's been some turnover.
Yeah. I saw that stat myself now. I don't count last year's county medal by the by. I never even trained with the team, so I wouldn't put it down as last year winning one. But yeah, being the oldest it felt a bit weird, you know, because like you said, I kind of feel that way as well. I still feel young, and you don't feel like you're the oldest. But sure, look, it is what it is. I kind of got that thought. It was hurling trained a few weeks ago with the club team, and I looked around at the warm up, and I did actually go to myself, oh god, I am one of the oldest here. There's only maybe Tommy Fitz and Joe Phelan. There's only maybe two or three lads making me feel young, you know. So
yeah, you'll read.
It's a weird one.
When you read the Leinster Express and they say veteran Catter Healy, that's when it'll really hit home to you, when you're described as a veteran.
Yeah, you know, you're running out of time then.
I was looking at the team though, like, I mean, because I went back training obviously last year and this year, and I was kind of amazed by the amount of new faces. And I think it was after you lost that game to Stradbally, the 10 in a row, like, there was some talk doing the rounds that you know, Portlaoise team might break up now, Bruno might retire and a few other lads might retire, and you know, the dominance might break up. But since then, like, I mean, Benny Carroll, Gary Saunders, David Holland, Kieran McAvoy, Frank Flanagan, Scott Lawless, Chris Finn, all these new young fellas have come in and the domination has continued. Like, I mean, I didn't know these young fellas were on the way up. You probably did. I was gone from the club for a long time.
Yeah, I suppose the thing about it was there probably wasn't a lot of success underage. Like, those lads mightn't have necessarily won a whole heap of minors or 21s or whatever, so that's probably kind of, maybe they weren't on people's radars that way, you know. But you're still, I think once we, it's like anything, if you win something and you hold on to the bulk of the squad and you get one or two more to add to it all the time,
yeah,
that's kind of what happened there. Now, that was a good chunk of fellas last year that were probably winning their first county medal saying that, but that's probably why they weren't, they hadn't a whole heap of medals, so they weren't really kind of standout coming up.
Right. Okay.
Look, they've added to it. They've made a huge difference. Like, they've driven it on, as you obviously you've seen.
Yeah, and Malachy deserves a lot of credit for introducing so many of them as well and freshening the whole thing up, because it looks like it has reinvigorated everybody.
Well, it has, and you're probably fair to say fair play to Malachy, because you know the easy thing as a manager to do is probably always to pick the experienced guy or the guy who's been there for a few years, and it's always a tough call to put in a new guy instead of him or drop someone that you had been playing. Malachy would have played with a lot of the team even still, so he does have to take credit for that and getting the panel fresh again. Like,
yeah, you've won 12, or you're saying you only won 11 county titles, but Rodgy would have won 12. 12 in the last 11 or 12 in the last 13 seasons or 14 or Manny, 15 seasons playing, but you've only two Leinsters.
12, 14. Yeah.
There's only two Leinsters in that time. 2004. I was involved in that one in 2009. Like, I mean, that's not a good record, Catter. Like, I mean, no matter what way you look at it, like, you've constantly been losing to the Dublin champions, which is understandable to a certain point. They're so strong. But at the same time, it's a long, long time to only win two.
Yeah, no, that's the truth. I think if it's 12 county championships in the last 15 years or whatever, we've only won two out of the 12 goals we had at Leinster. So no, the record isn't good. There's no, we can't hide from that. And there has been, I suppose, when you look back over those years, there would be some years I would have felt we left it behind us, and then there's other years we thought we were just beaten by the better team, and we can have no complaints. You know, I think Vincent gave us an absolute trim in one year. We can't have any complaints, just weren't up to it. Then there's another year we kind of, you know, you lose by a point, Leinster final 15 maybe, and you think, there's your what ifs. You go, have we left that one behind us, you know? So no, those are ducks overall. It's not a good record. We can't hide from it.
The one thing that Portlaoise always did is that they took care of the Kildare champions, they took care of the Mullina Hoctas, the Rhodes. You know, it was the Dublin champions that Portlaoise were struggling with, and in fairness, gave Dublin champions St Bridget's extra time, should have beaten Ballyboden, could have beaten Vincent's in Tullamore, you know, got close enough to Ballymun. But last year lost to Moorfield, which was a kind of, I don't know, it almost seemed like a step kind of backwards for Portlaoise. And I'm wondering, like, that obviously puts a lot of significance on this Saturday, considering you just don't want to be losing to Kildare champions a second year in a row.
Yeah, yeah. Well, look, that's fair. I suppose the thing about Moorfield is that was our third time playing them in Leinster Championship, and it had been two real dogfight war games those other two times. Like, we were delighted to come out with a win the first two times we bet them, so it was kind of, we wouldn't have taken them for granted or anything last year. But of course, it's sickening to lose, you know, but it's great. Look, we have another chance again this Sunday to maybe put those demons right. I didn't see the game last year, I was in London, I was obviously injured, as we said, so I can't comment too much on last year, but we're buzzing and raring to go for this week anyway.
Yeah, no, just a sickening thing. I remember watching that. It was like, I mean, Portlaoise were three up with 10 minutes to go, looked in control, and then end up losing it with a goal, and then the word comes through that Ratneu are after beating St Vincent's, and it's like, Jesus, can't catch a break here at all.
Yeah, yeah. So look, that's one way of looking at it. All right, yeah. But Moorfield are they're fairly handy at the late comebacks, because they didn't do it again in the Leinster final. You know,
they did, yeah, they did.
You just have to go to the end with those boys, it seems.
Yeah, no, definitely. Come here. Has Eddie Brennan been in contact with you?
Yeah, Eddie Brennan rang me. I spoke to him maybe the week before the County Hurling final, and I spoke to John Sugru maybe the week after the County Football final.
Right, and so what's the story? Who are you going with this year? You've been committing with the Leash Hurlers for the last few years.
Yeah, yeah. I honestly, I haven't decided yet. I'm kind of 50-50 split down the middle. You know, I kind of love the hurling and I want to play. I love the game and I feel a loyalty towards a lot of the hurlers in there. But then there's, since I finished up with the football 5 or 6 years ago, I kind of have an itch to kind of prove myself. I feel I never proved myself as a county footballer. So I'm kind of, I'm stuck in the middle on it at the minute. You know, I don't really know what to do.
Right, okay. And are both fellas open to Jewel, or is that out of the question for you, considering you're living?
Yeah. I never even mentioned it to them. Now, it never came up in either of the conversations. Now, the conversations were very general, you know, like, because to be fair to them, they've been very sound, saying, look, focus on your club championship. Don't worry about giving an answer one way or another. You know, you've got to focus on the club championship first. So I didn't mention Jewel, and I think the way everything's condensed now, I think that day is definitely, I think it's put to bed now, because is there a lot of league games clashing?
Yeah.
And the whole month of May is about 5 hurling games or 4 hurling games or something in the Joe McDonough, which would probably mean there'd be a clash with a Leinster football championship as well. So it's probably just, and if I'm over here, it probably makes it even less feasible.
Yeah, no, it's definitely one or the other. I don't think you can do anything about that. Just want to give you a mention, because you're obviously a big hurling man, and Portlaoise hurlers haven't had too much to sing about since 2004. Won the senior A this year, surprisingly relegated last year. And I was looking at it, you were outsiders to beat Glenealy. They made the intermediate All-Ireland final last year, or was it Leinster final last year against Ballyragget?
So Leinster, like, I mean, final,
yeah. You're outsiders going into that. I didn't have you as outsiders, but it was an important win, and it'd be nice to get a provincial title.
It'd be class, you know. Like, look, obviously Portlaoise hurling as a club, you know, we didn't want to be an intermediate in Leash, you know, but we're delighted to have won it and come straight back up. That was a real big win for us, and we're going to give it our best shot at Leinster anyway. Like, we knew, like you said, Glenealy were in the Leinster final last year, and then he lost to Ballyragget, the Kenny champions, by a point. So we knew they were going to be good. So we were up for it, and it turned out to be the dogfight we expected. So they're kind of always sweet when you win those ones in the muck and the rain, you know.
Yeah, down in Knockram, not an easy place to go, as we all know.
This is this leash curse that's supposedly down there, yeah. 30 whatever years it is later.
Come here, what's your plans for the weekend? What's your travel arrangements?
I think I'm flying in Friday night. You land in Dublin Friday night, maybe 9 or 10 o'clock. And then fly back out of Dublin Sunday night, then about 9 o'clock, I'd say. I'd have to check up the exact details, but in on a Friday night, out on a Sunday night,
in and out
on a Monday morning.
And they'll do some some training session Saturday, I'm sure, just to loosen up, or whatever, you have a group session or?
I don't know do we have a planned meeting session now? I'm not sure. I don't, if I've been honest, fully, when the group messages come through saying the schedule, I kind of don't pay attention to it, because I'm not there either way. So.
Right, you have it on mute.
Maybe cut that bit out in case.
I'd say you'll be safe enough. You'll be starting one way or another. Come here, Carr. Thanks very much for taking the call. Best of luck against Moorfield.
Thanks, Willie. No bother at all.
Conan Doherty was a fantastic analyst. And I mean, I really heed what he would say in your programme.
I think Tyrone are going to win. I'm going to go with them. As much as I predicted Dublin to win the All-Ireland at the start of the year, I just think Tyrone are going too well. They're unaffected by the other team. Too well set up. I think they've been preparing for Dublin for 2 years. They're ready for them. I'm going to go with them. Yeah.
All right, lads, so there's good matches at the weekend as well. They're all on Sunday, the 11th of November. So there's a full round of Leinster Club quarterfinals. So the first one is Dunboyne Meath versus Kilmacud Crokes of Dublin. So, like, I mean, Meath clubs don't cover themselves in glory in the Leinster Club. They haven't been strong in a long time. Dunshaughlin won it, I think it was 2001. They were the last time a Meath team has won it, and they've had 4 winners of the competition ever. So, like, I mean, when you consider how strong Mead were during the 80s and 90s, it's a very weird one. Like, I mean, that tradition just isn't there. Kilmacud Crokes have won it 4 times. They won the All-Ireland Club twice. They're a real superpower. We know that. But still, Mead versus Dublin will still be close enough. Remember in 2008, the year St. Vincent's won the All-Ireland Club. They beat Nemo in the final. They beat us in the Leinster semi-final. And the game before that, they went and played the Mead champions, which was... maybe Navan O'Matney's or something like that, and they scraped over them by a point before they beat us, and then they beat us well. So going away to Navan to play the Meath champions basically is not necessarily a done deal. So that's in Park Talton at 1:30. Then the next one is, like I was talking to Catter about, this is Moorfield versus Portlaoise. This is in Newbridge at 1:30. Moorfield have won it twice in their history, 2006 and last year. Never won the All-Ireland. Portlaoise have won it 7 times. They're record winners along with St Vincent's. St Vincent's, though, have won 3 All-Ireland clubs. Portlaoise have only won 1. And that's a big kind of blot on the Portlaoise. And like I was talking to Catter, he has 11, 12 county titles. He's 11. He didn't count last year because he was injured, and he's only 2 Leinster clubs, so that's not a good record for Portlaoise. They've struggled. Like, I mean, do you remember the Leinster final against Ballyboden? Like, Paul Catalan missing that last free just to level it, and
that was the year that Ballyboden won it.
Ballyboden won the All-Ireland. They lost to Vincent's by, it was a point in it into injury time. Vincent's got a late, 2 late points to win by 3. Portlaoise went up ahead in that second half. Well, in that game, Vincent's won the All-Ireland that year. They lost to Ballymun Kickhams by 3 in, where was that? In Mullingar. And Ballymun got to the final and should have beaten Bridget's. Do you know, it was so bloody close. So close to these, against St. Bridget's that year, they lost to Gary Castle. They beat Portlaoise after extra time. I was playing that day. So, like, I mean, they're so close. Just but continually losing to the Dublin champions just isn't good enough either, because Portlaoise should be able to, you know, beat them. And now they're back into the Leinster club again. Lost to Moorfield last year. And as far as I'm concerned, they simply have to beat Moorfield at the weekend, and that's the reality of it, or else Portlaoise are slipping back into the Moorfield Road Mullinahocta standard, who all beat each other and lose to the Dublin. You know what I mean? Yeah. Portlaoise always took care of these lads, always took care of these teams, and then you would say weren't good enough to beat Dublin, or were unlucky to beat Dublin. But, like, I mean, they could slip off that radar if they're not careful. That's all I'd say on that.
Have they been just unlucky to keep meeting the Dublin team? I suppose you have to beat the Dublin team.
You have to beat them, And this is the sickener with last year. Shiratnew beat Vincent's. And this word is coming true as Portlaoise throw away a 3-point lead against Moorfield, who go on to win it. Oh Christ, we're sick of it. Like, the amount of lads you just meet coming out, and everyone's just shaking their heads at throwing away the lead, and then hearing the result from thinking of the heartbreak we've had. We beat Kilmacud Crokes in the Leinster semi-final in 2004, and that's the last time we've beaten the Dublin champions.
The subs had a smile on their face after
that. I'd like to backtrack off those subs comments, but I can't do it. Right, Road play Mullinahocta. Mullinahocta actually are third favourites to win the Leinster club, behind Kilmacud and Portlaoise. So they play off a road in Tullamore at 1:30. All these matches are at 1:30. I'm not sure why it's such an early start. If I'm being honest, it's a bit of a pain in the arse. Like, I mean, when do you get the dinner? But seriously, logistically, when are you meant to have the Sunday dinner? Like, I'm going to Newbridge now on Sunday, and the match.
Oh, you mean for a supporter? No. I thought you were thinking about the player. When's
he
going
after brunch now? Will he instead?
Brunch. Give me a break. That should be outlawed. No, I think brunch is a disgrace. You have breakfast or you have lunch.
You're the home of the brunch in Dublin.
It's a Southside Dublin nonsense. Itzy's talking about start opening for brunch on a Sunday. I'm like, stop going. No.
Next time we'll have a load of subs in here.
Yeah, a load of subs. Right, so that's a big one. Mullinahocta have never won it. Road have lost 5 finals since 2006, so they really have been the nearly men. They've lost to Moorfield, Kilmacud twice, and St Vincent's twice. And this Road team now is not of the level of some of the Road teams over that last 10 years. So, like, I mean, I'd fancy Mullinahocta maybe to beat them. Other one in the Leinster club is Newtown Blues from Loud versus Aroge Carlow. You might be a bit too young to remember Aroge's brilliant run in the 90s, lads, and you're obviously not from Leinster as well, but they were the talk of Leinster back in the 90s. They won the Leinster club in 92, 93, 95, 96 and 98. Never won the All-Ireland. Lost to O'Donovan Rossa after a replay in the 92-93 one, which was their first ever one. And you're thinking, right, this, and you know, they might win another one.
I'm sure they had won it.
Never won the All-Ireland, which was heartbreaking for them. They lost to Lone Ranger as well in 95-96, so they got to 2 finals, lost 3 All-Ireland semi-finals, but they dominated Leinster club football, absolutely dominated, had a brilliant team. So, like, I mean, that's a toss-up for me. I haven't seen the odds on that, actually, but it's a toss-up as far as I'm concerned. Connacht Club's semi-finals, Aughawillan from Leitrim play Ballintubber of Mayo. That's in Carrick on Shannon. And that's at 2 o'clock. A lot more reasonable in Connacht. You could have the dinner and stroll up. Maybe have an early dinner at 12:30.
Plenty of places in Carrick and Shannon too.
Plenty, yeah. But like, I mean, Sunday dinner is a bit, you should, don't be messing with Sunday dinner. Right? That's, that starts at 1 o'clock and you'll finish at,
what's the, your ideal time for the Sunday?
3:30, the county final time.
Right, okay.
County final time, 3 o'clock. There's no reason why you couldn't have, 1:30 is outrageous.
But what's your time for dinner though?
1 o'clock.
1 o'clock
on a Sunday. 1:30, 1:30 on a Sunday.
And you couldn't have it at 4 after the game? Or is that too, geez, you're looking at me like it's way too late. Like,
so what, what'll you do now?
Too late
Newbridge?
In the Parkinson house, lads. It's too late in the Parkinson house. Just doesn't fit. The Sunday roast dinner does not fit at any time outside of 1:30, 1:30. Clonagale, Roscommon play Corrifin, Galway. That's probably the, one of the ties of the weekend. I think Moorfield against Portlaoise and Clonagale against Corrifin are probably, although Road Mullinahocta will be a good one. You know, that's going to be a good one as well. So that's in Dr. Hyde Park at 2 o'clock. Munster Club matches Denier, Waterford play Milltown, Malbay and Clare. That's in Farher Field at 1:30. They're all at 1:30. I wonder, do you have a theory on why they're so early, lads? Or does this, doesn't seem to bother either of the two of you?
And to do with travelling home with the you know, it gets dark now at 5 o'clock or something like that. So when people, maybe that's it.
Maybe if it goes to extra time and you don't have lights, maybe something like that.
3 p.m. in Ulster, I see here, boy.
There you go. They're always one step ahead. So Dr. Crokes play St. Finbar. So that's another big game this weekend. Again at 1:30. St. Finbar's are an interesting enough one. They've won nine county titles. They've 4 Munster clubs. So if you look at Portlaoise having won 12 and only 2 Leinster clubs, you're looking at 1/6. You know what I mean? Yeah. So you're running under 20% there. These are nearly at 50% under Munster clubs from county titles. And out of the 4 Munster clubs they've won 3 All Irelands.
Yeah, that's some record. 75%
on Munsters to All Irelands. That's sensational, isn't it? Like, I mean, they're really making the, Portlaoise have, I think Portlaoise have 35 county titles. Finbar's have 9, 3 All Irelands and 4 Munster clubs.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, just because of that, you give them some chance. We know Nemo Rangers beat Dr. Crokes last year, but like, I mean, I doubt Dr. Crokes are going to get beaten by the enemy 2 years in a row. Ulster Club Senior Hurling Championship final. Ballycran, who shocked Slocknail in the last round, they play Cushendall. Cushendall have won it 10 times. They're the leaders of the Ulster Club Hurling with Cú Chulainns of Dunloy, who haven't won it in a while. So Ballycran have won it 3 times. Last time they won it in 93. They were hammered in the final in 2011 by Lochale Shamrock. So you'd imagine Cushendall are going to win that one. There's another intermediate Ulster Club final between Keady and St. Gall's. And there's an Ulster Junior final between Castle Blaney from Monaghan and Cushion Dunn of Antrim. Have I got
pronunciations all right? I think, yeah.
She's no messing, rolling off the tongue. Yeah. And I hadn't proofread. Now, I have to tell anyone this, I proofread nothing. And the proof of that is in the pronunciation. But that's it, lads. So that's always time for this week. So thanks to everyone for watching on YouTube. And we'll be back on Monday as usual. And we'll review the weekend's action. Talk to you then. Good luck.
Yet it took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.